Chapter 24. When Linda returned with two sacks of groceries from Safeway, she set them down on the dinette table. Her visit with Howard had been emotionally draining, and she had cried all the way home, and even while standing in the produce aisle at the grocery store. Howard had told her he received the letter from her attorney threatening him with an alienation of affection suit, and he'd said a lot of mean things to her. They fought about the number of visits each had with one child or the other, and even though Linda promised herself that she wouldn't mention Judy Harper's name, she did. She paid the sitter, changed into jeans and a blue and white striped shirt, and took the boys outside to play in their sandbox. She wondered when she would ever have some peace of mind. Around 6, Howard telephoned, acting as nice as could be. "Linda, I'd like to take all the boys to the movies. I think they would enjoy that. We'll go to Wendy's first and then on to North Little Rock for the movie. E.T. is playing at the cheap movies. I hear that's a good, decent movie." Shocked by the invitation because he'd never taken all four boys anywhere at the same time before, she agreed to have them ready by 6. "Boys," she called through the kitchen screen door, "come inside and get your bath. Your daddy's going to take you to the movies. Won't that be something?" Later, when Howard knocked on the front door, she had Johnny and Bobby dressed in their best outfits, hair parted and shirts tucked in. She walked them to the door and expected to see the older boys waiting in the car. "Where are Carl and Harry? Aren't they going?" "Oh, sure. I'm going back to pick them up. You know those guys. They're never on time." Linda handed Howard a paper sack with two extra diapers in case Johnny had an accident. She kissed each one, waved goodbye, and went into the kitchen to put up the groceries. She'd forgotten about the popsicles, and they had melted into a puddle at the bottom of the sack. She had too much on her mind, she told herself, and began to cry. Around 7:30, she answered a loud knock on the front door. She opened it and recognized Wayne Hicks and another man who was introduced to her as Van Buren's chief of police, Gary Robertson. The man standing behind them wore Cabot police uniforms. "Linda," Robertson said, "may we come in? There's something very important we need to talk to you about." What in the world, she thought. What's going on? But she smiled and pushed open the screen door.
"Is there a table we could sit at?" Hicks asked.
Linda led them into her kitchen and motioned to the small table by the window. "What's this about?" she asked. "We have some new information about your mom's murder," Robertson said. Linda's face lost its rosy color and faded to a pale gray.
"Well, what is it?"
Robertson cleared his throat. "We've got a warrant for your arrest for the murder of your mother, Ruiann Park." He pulled out a white sheet of paper from his inside coat pocket. "We have this bench warrant that charges you with murder in the first degree, a Class Y felony." With her lips moving, she read the document, and Hicks thought at first he saw some relief in her face. But then she gasped and put her hand to her mouth. She listened as Hicks read her rights, and she held herself together long enough to sign a piece of paper he placed in front of her. She felt like her heart would stop beating any minute. Her voice was a whisper, and the words she wanted to say wouldn't come out.
"We need you to come to Van Buren with us."
Hicks spoke louder, as if he thought she hadn't heard him. Linda tried to stand up, but she didn't know if her legs would support her.
"What?"
"We have evidence to support this arrest."
"But my children, what about my babies?"
Gary Robertson placed his hand on her shoulder.
"Your husband will take care of them. We made arrangements for him to keep the children, the younger ones, I mean. He already has the older boys, right?"
Poor girl, he thought. There's no way she could have done such a thing. She was so little, so shy. But yet, he had heard the tapes.
"How long will I be gone? Should I pack an overnight bag?" Linda said.
She was in the middle of a heavy period. She'd need to take some Kotex and maybe a change of underwear.
"No, you have to come right now."
"My purse. Can I take my purse?"
Wayne Hicks looked to the police chief, who nodded his head yes.
"Okay, grab your purse." She walked into her bedroom and retrieved the purse that she habitually kept on the door handle. Her hands were shaking so wildly that she had trouble holding on to it. "Dear God," she wailed, holding on to the bed for support. "How did they find out? Who told the police?" Hicks stood in the hall, leaning against the wall. He held his head down and rubbed his right shoe against the cheap beige carpet that had been stained by previous renters. "You need to use the restroom?" he asked Linda. She told him she didn't, but she would like to get a glass of water. Her mouth was dry, and she felt like she might be sick.
"Go ahead," Hicks said. "Can I have one too, please?"
Chief Robertson rotated his shoulders and sighed, and Hicks knew he was getting angry at the delay.
"Don't be long,"
Hicks said, following Linda into the kitchen. Robertson was anxious to get back to Van Buren at a reasonable hour. It had been a long, hard day. He looked at his watch. He'd been up since 5, driven to Little Rock, and conferred with the state police investigator before they drove to Cabot. He'd had nothing but coffee all day, and he realized he needed something in his stomach or his ulcer would give him trouble. "We'll stop on the road and get something to go," Robertson said. Linda handed a small plastic glass to Hicks.
"You can tell I've got little kids, can't you?"
He held the little Mickey Mouse cup in his hand.
"This'll be just fine."
Robertson looked at his watch again and opened the front door. "Mrs. Martin, I have to handcuff you. Please put your arms in front of you." Linda did as she was told. She'd seen on Law and Order that handcuffs were supposed to hurt. These only felt heavy, and she was relieved they didn't seem tight. "Let's go," Robertson said. He helped her down the sidewalk and opened the police car's rear door and motioned for Linda to get in. Hicks sat in the driver's seat, turned the key, and slid the gear shift into drive. He paused, looked both ways.
I can't remember whether to turn right or left."
Linda leaned forward and tapped him on the shoulder.
"Turn right."
Hicks drove very fast, Linda thought. She could see the dashboard from where she sat, and the gauge was steady at 80 miles an hour. He also had the air conditioner blasting cold air, and when she touched her nose, she was surprised to find it cold. Should she ask him to turn it down? The other guy, the police chief, was leaning against the window of the passenger side. He was impressed, she thought, with his title. He wore shiny cowboy boots, and on his red tie was a tie clasp that depicted a pair of handcuffs. Even though Hicks was obese, he seemed nicer and more polite. He had gone to high school with her, but Robertson must have been from somewhere else. Out the window, she saw the lights of Conway, and the traffic was heavy with a steady stream of trucks. She'd already counted 3 Walmart trucks. This was a highway she had traveled many times. She couldn't remember a time when she had driven it while in a happy mood. Every time she'd gone home to Van Buren, her mother had demanded it, and her husband was mad that she had gone. She couldn't win with them. Rui hated Howard. Howard hated Rui. She felt tears on her cheeks, and she blotted them with her arm. What was going to happen when they got to Van Buren? She cried harder, but this time she let the tears fall, not caring enough about herself to conceal them. It seemed to Linda that she had been crying all her life.